Very excited this morning. Got to go back and start teaching school this week. I'm sure you can see the excitement on my features. Since I have to go back to school, I'm going to make you go to school this morning. Misery loves company. So, I'm going to be reading from Ephesians 4. I'm going to put it on the PowerPoint if you care to follow along. You certainly may. Ephesians 4, 15 and 16. And then, after having given you the material, I'm going to test you on it. I'm going to ask you three questions about the two verses that we are about to read. Ephesians 4, 15 and 16. We are to grow up into Christ. He is talking about Christians. And he's talking specifically in the context of the church, Christians together, the church as a group. We are to grow up into Christ, from whom the whole body, the church, held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each part, causes the growth of the body, the church, for its building up. Question number one. What, according to this verse, just thinking about these two verses, as the church, what is our purpose? What are we supposed to be aiming at? What are we supposed to be accomplishing? What's the end goal is the question that I'm asking. As the church, what is our purpose? He says it twice, once in each verse, and it, of course, is growth. Our purpose as the church is improvement, getting better at being like Jesus. As a group, we're supposed to do this together, to work on this together. And together, because God never envisioned Lone Ranger Christians. And a lot of people want that to be true, that they can serve God just as well on their own, at the beach, or on a boat, or in the woods, and they can worship and serve God and get everything they need just between them and God, out in nature, or at the house, or wherever. And it's just not true. God never envisioned Lone Ranger Christians. In fact, the Lone Ranger is kind of a misnomer. He wasn't even alone. He had a buddy and two horses between them. He wasn't even alone. But anyway, how are we supposed to grow together as believers, as a church? How is it to be achieved according to this passage? What creates the growth? Now you'll notice that he says we are to grow up into Christ, from whom Jesus is the ultimate cause. What I'm asking you is, what is our part? Because we have a part here. What is our part in growth? Well, he says we're to grow up, from whom the whole body, held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each part. So, how do we do the growth? How do we accomplish the growth? How do we do that? The body, the church, grows as what? As each part does its part, right? That's what he says. The church grows as each part does its part. What are the parts? What are the parts? Kadia, Donald, Gene, Bill, Jim, Kim, any other M's we might have. I don't know if we have other M's, but they're included. All of the parts, all of the people are parts. And for the church to grow, each part must do its part. So I want to ask you, and I can't answer this one for you, what is your part? That's not in the verse. That's something you have to answer. I don't know what that is. That's what you have to figure out. And that's what you have to do, is to figure out what part you are. I want to be the brain. I'm probably a toenail. I don't know. But, you know, 1 Corinthians 12 says toenails matter too. I mean, have you ever read? I'm not going to go down that road. They matter. So, what is your part? That's what you have to figure out. And I want to think about that from sort of a weird place, Exodus 17. We're going to read Exodus 17, 8 to 16. You're going to say, what in the world does this have to do with what my part is? Well, as we read it, I want you to answer two questions. Number one, what does it tell you about God? Because that's the main point of the passage. But a secondary point of the passage, which is also an intended takeaway by the original writer to the original audience, a part of this is, what do I have to do to create conditions where God can do His ultimate work? What do I have to do? How do I have to cooperate with God? So, Exodus 17 and verse 8. Then Amalek, which is a group of people, it's an ethnic group of people. Amalek came and fought against Israel, God's people, at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, now notice the people. Notice what the people do. Moses said to Joshua, choose men for us to and go out, fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. Verse 10, what did Joshua do? Joshua did as Moses told him and fought against Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. So it came about when Moses held his hand up that Israel prevailed. And when he let his hands down, Amalek prevailed. So notice what's happening. Israel, the people of God, are fighting a battle against the Amalekites. And Moses is up on the hill with his buddies Aaron and Hur. Hur, by the way, if you're not following along, it's capital H-U-R. That's not an unnamed girl. Moses, Aaron, and Hur. Hur who? Who's she? Not a she. Hur's a guy. Never mind. So Moses, Aaron, and Hur are up on the hill. Whenever Moses holds his hands up, what happens? Israel wins. Whenever Moses' hands drop, what happens? Amalek begins to... Well, why doesn't Moses just keep his hands up then? I mean, duh, if you drop them and Israel starts to lose, why don't we just keep them up? Well, why don't we? Because that's really hard to do. You ever try to do that? Hold your hands up for a while? Mine are getting a little heavy right now, but I'm old and weak. But Moses can't hold his hands up the whole time. So what happens? Well, verse 12, Moses' hands were heavy. Then they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and one on the other. Thus his hands were steady until the sun set. So Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this in a book as a memorial and recite it to Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Moses built an altar and named it, the Lord is my banner. And he said, the Lord has sworn. The Lord will have war against Amalek from generation to generation. So that's the story. What does it tell you about God? This is the main thing. Very often in Bible accounts, by the way, you can find the main point by looking at the end of the story. It's sort of like Aesop's fable, right? You read Aesop's fable, you get the end, what does it say? The moral is, and it tells you. That's very often true in Scripture. What does this passage tell us about the attitude and actions of God? Well, it tells us something about God's attitude and actions toward His people. If you are a believer, God fights your enemies. If you're a believer, God is fighting for you, and He doesn't say you won't be attacked, you won't suffer, you won't hurt. He says when you're attacked by what? Enemies, sickness, Satan, poverty, stress, whatever it is. When you are attacked, God says, I'll fight for you. But there's somebody else here, and it is the enemies of God. And God says about, so this is the point of 14 to 16. When you make yourself an enemy of God, God makes Himself an enemy of you. And He is forever and eternally against you unless you do what? Become one of His people. So this is the main point of the account. This is the main point that Moses is getting across. However, what I want to emphasize, which is a secondary point, is what's our job? Because God does not tell the Israelites, stand there and I will defeat the Amalekites while you don't do anything. Well, you notice that? God did not say to them, don't do anything, I'll take care of it. There's a role for believers to play. Our job is to know and to fill our proper role. Our job is to know what am I supposed to be doing and then to do that thing. If we want the very best of what God has to offer, we must fill the role that we have to fill. Now notice the roles in Exodus chapter 17. Notice the roles that we find. What was the role of Moses in Exodus 17, right? Moses was, first of all, and yes, followership is a word. I don't think I knew that either until preparing for the sermon, but it is. I looked it up. It's a word. Moses, first of all, was a follower. Who did he follow? God. That's his first role. Then, as a follower of God, what did God call him to do? To lead Israel and give commands to Joshua. Let's talk about Joshua. What were Joshua's roles? Joshua was a follower of who? Of Moses. He had to do what Moses told him to do. What did Moses tell him to do? Lead the army. Okay? So notice that roles can differ depending on the situation. What about Israel? What was Israel's job? Israel's job was to follow Moses and Joshua. Did Israel ever get a little uppity and decide that they were tired of following and try to lead? They did. And they were always punished for it. They did not keep their role. And then two more people, Aaron and Hur. What were the roles of Aaron and Hur? Aaron and Hur were important because they gave assistance to Moses in his role. These are the three roles that we're going to talk about this morning. The roles of leadership, followership, and assistance. How important was it that everybody filled their role? What if Moses had not filled his role? Well, what happened every time his hands fell? The Israelites lost. What if Joshua had not fulfilled his role and gotten the army together and led them? They would have lost. What if the Israelites had not followed the leadership of Joshua? What if Aaron and Hur had said, "We don't want to be hand holders. We don't want to be assistants. We want to be in charge." Then they would have lost. Filling our roles is extremely important. And notice that roles can differ. In this congregation, we have elders. It is the job of our elders to plan activities for our congregation, to say something like, "This spring, we want to have a group activity for the church." Now, the elders are not going to plan that. What are the elders going to do? The elders, who are the leaders, are going to hand that off to Miss Belva and say, "We would like to have an activity. Would you take care of it?" And she will say yes, and then she will take the lead. And she'll rent the place, and she'll set it up, and she'll make sure all the food is coming. And then when it's over, and it's time to put up all the tables, everybody will go to her, elders included, and say, "Miss Belva, what do we need to do?" And she will say, "Those tables need to go there." And Neil and Troy and Ray will say, "Yes, ma'am," and fold them up and take them there. Because the elders in one situation are in leadership, but in some things they're in followership. And sometimes they assist. And so roles can differ depending on the situation. Why does it matter that we fill our roles? Why does it matter that we do the jobs that need to get done in the way that they're supposed to get done? Well, first of all, because God hates chaos. God hates chaos. God hates anarchy. God hates disorganization. God hates disorder and confusion. Those church services at Corinth were getting pretty rowdy. And Paul wrote to them and said, "Y'all need to settle down. If somebody wants to say something, he needs to take his turn. And if you've got more than three prophets, the fourth one needs to be quiet. Because your service is getting rowdy, and God is not the author of confusion, but order." God doesn't like confusion and chaos. God punishes rebellion. Anytime the followers rose up and said, "We want to lead," God punished them. It's also important because every part is important. This is such a crucial truth that the New Testament expresses it at length at least three times. Romans, 1 Corinthians, and Ephesians. And it compares the church to a human body. Now, if the church is like a human body, which body part are you okay saying goodbye to? If the church is like a human body, which body part, I've got 10 toes, I can do without one? You don't want to do that. "I've got 10 fingers, I can do without one," or one, as the case may be. "I lost half a finger, I'd love to have it back." That's a big deal to me that I don't have part of a finger. It's a part of my body. Which body part? If the church is like a family, I know this is a loaded question. I'm going to ask it anyway. If the church is like a family, which family member are you okay getting rid of? Now, I know some of you are going, "Hey, I got one." Okay, I got that. I know sometimes that's true. Generally speaking, though, which family member are you okay saying, "They're not important, we can let them go"? They're all important. The church is like a body. The church is like a family. It's all important. None of it is expendable. So I want to talk for just a little bit about these three roles, what our responsibilities are, and then we'll be done. In the church, we have several different sorts of leadership roles. We have some leadership roles that are defined. We have three men who are elders. We have three men who are, it's three or two now. John, is it three or two deacons? We're down to two. I'm sorry, so we have two. Two men. We do have, I thought we did. I thought that was right. So, just another proof, preachers always smarter than deacons. That is always going to be true. So we have three deacons, these defined roles of elders, the defined role of deacon. We have the defined role in our classes of the teacher, right? The one who's teaching, who holds that title. We have defined roles when we assemble to meet together as a church. We got somebody that stands up and preaches. That's my role. We got somebody that leads singing, leads a prayer, does the Lord's Supper. We have these defined roles. We also have leaders without titles. The church also has leaders without titles. Debbie is a leader without a title. Not because she's an elder's wife, but, and we were talking about that this morning, Debbie is a leader without a title. Because when somebody gets sick or ends up in the hospital or can't take care of themselves, Debbie is like a whirlwind. And she's cooking nonstop, and she's calling other people and getting them to cook nonstop. And there's a lot of stuff that wouldn't get done if Debbie didn't do it. What's Debbie's title? She doesn't have one. Oh, Emma, I mean, she's got that. But other than that, she doesn't have a title. She just leads. Miss Mary and Teresa, leaders without titles. They organize things for our women to get together and do together. That's leadership without a title. My daughter, Rhiannon, in this congregation, continues to be a leader. My wife, a leader in getting certain things done. And then sometimes there are roles without leaders. Sometimes we have roles that need filling that do not have enough people to fill them. This is almost always true of teachers. We almost always need teachers. And it shouldn't be that way. We almost always need teachers. John is nodding. John, the education deacon. And John is nodding his head. We always need teachers. We're always in need of believers to stand up and say, I will teach a Bible class. We're always in need of that. We have roles that need to be filled. Leadership roles that we would all agree are important. And that if the elders one day stood up and said, we've just decided no more Bible classes, we'd rebel. See, you can't not have Bible class. It's important. Who wants to teach it? Sometimes crickets to that question. We need people to fill the roles that we have. We also need people who are willing to follow. We need people who are willing to submit to our eldership. They carry authority. Now, it seems like to me, and I'm sure it does to you, I've been talking about this a lot lately, that is not intentional. And let me be quick to say, the elders have in no time have asked me to stand up here and harp on following their leadership. That's never happened. Here's what's weird about that. They didn't ask for it. I have not intended it. And yet, everywhere I turn in Scripture, what I'm finding is this important principle of submission to leadership. It's all over the Bible. Our job is to follow the lead of our elders. Our job is to serve under our deacons. The purpose of deacons is not to do all the work. The purpose of deacons is to lead the work and then get Christians to help them do it. We do not appoint deacons, so now we don't have to do anything. We appoint deacons to organize us to get it done. Participating in activities. We had a get-together. It's been a while back now. But we were having a social event. And now tell me what you think about this question directed to me. Somebody said to me, are you going to that event? It was like a potluck or something. Somebody asked me, are you going? Well, what do you think about that question? What do you think about that? You probably think, dude, he's the preacher. Of course he's going. Now, my answer to the person who asked me was, of course I'm going. Now, not because I'm the preacher. It has nothing to do with being the preacher. What it has to do with is being a member of this congregation, of having come to this congregation and said, I want to be part of this. I want to work with you. I want to meet with you. I want to support you. I want to help you. So yes, when you have something, I will be there. Now, I'm going to be real with you, and I may regret saying this, but I'm just going to be real with you. I'm just going to tell you how I feel. There's a lot of times that something is going on and I don't want to go. I was already getting that way. The older I got, the less I wanted to be around people. Which was already low anyway. I didn't like it much anyway. The older I get, the worse it gets. And then COVID came along. Like, COVID did a number on me. COVID got me used to being home and being left alone. Wow, man. And now, then we got back together and it's like, oh, we're going to have this and have that and have that. And I thought, I don't always like going to things. I'll be honest with you. I don't enjoy every single thing we do. I know I'm going to regret saying this. Like, my singing is not my favorite activity. I'm just going to be real with you. Singing is not my favorite. And if I had the choice of spending an hour singing or an hour studying the Bible, whether I was teaching or not, it doesn't matter. If I had the choice, I would pick studying. I would pick Bible study over singing. I'm just not a big singer. Those of you who heard me lead singing know why. But the church has decided that we're going to get together and sing. That's what we decided. And I'm going to be there. I want to be there. And what I find is, even though it wouldn't be my choice, and sometimes I'd rather stay home, when I go and I participate and I get to be around people I love and get to be active in something productive, I'm always happy I came. It's always a benefit. I learned all of that, thank God, as a child. In my home and at the congregation where I grew up. When I was, I don't know how old, we started a church in the next town over from where we had been attending. There was not a Church of Christ there, so we started one. And we were renting a place to meet, because we didn't have any money. And in order to use this place, we had to go in on Saturday night, somebody did, had to go in and set up chairs. And then when it was over, the church, everybody was there, would put them up, but somebody had to go in and set them up. Somehow, my mother and I, and two of our very good friends, somehow, I don't know how, I'd love to know how that happened, but somehow we got picked or whatever to be the chair setter uppers, the chair people. And so every Saturday night, we'd eat supper, jump in the car, go set up chairs. There were times I resented that. There were times I hated that. There were times I didn't want to go set up chairs. But what that taught me was, you're a member of a congregation. You're a member of a group of people that you have committed to. And when they're doing something together or they need something done, you should participate in what they're doing. And I am so thankful. I was baptized at the age of 15. The congregations where I grew up were hardcore about young men who got baptized. As soon as you got baptized, you were on the duty roster. Invitation, song leading, prayer, Lord's Supper. They didn't give you a minute to breathe. I'm so thankful for that. Because it taught me that if you're going to be a member of a congregation, be there and be involved. Now, you don't have to do... We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about that in a minute. I have two friends who were married and are now divorced. Part of the reason that they got divorced is because they had nothing in common. He loves sports, and she hates sports. She loves plays and theater, and he hates that stuff. And they could not figure out how to make that work. Either he went and did his thing, and she didn't, and vice versa, or they went and did the other person's thing and griped about it the whole time. And it didn't last. Because neither one of them was willing to say, that may not be what I want to do right now, but because the family is doing it, I'm going to be there with a good attitude. That's what we need to do when it comes to the congregation. Assistance. Giving assistance to those who are in need, whether it is material assistance, if you have money or a car or a home or food, and someone needs those things, it is your obligation and mine to provide them. Emotional support, when someone is sad or overwhelmed or stressed, when someone is struggling spiritually, it is the job of one who is assisting in order to help them to deal with those things. Now, let me hasten to say that when we talk about roles in church, we almost always go right to the assembly and don't say much else about anything else. That's not the only thing that needs to be done. My youngest son does not, and he's going to hate me for bringing this up, my youngest son does not lead in the assembly. He's not comfortable with it. He doesn't want to do it. But he does a lot of things behind the scenes that have to be done and that make things a lot easier on the rest of us. You don't have to do anything in the public assembly to be serving. Somebody has to, but there are other things to be done as well. Getting roles right is essential. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verses 16 and 17, Paul makes the statement, "You are a temple of God." Now, he makes that statement twice in the book of 1 Corinthians. In chapter 6, he means the individual Christian. In chapter 3, he means the church. We know that by context. In 1 Corinthians 3, he is saying, Morehead City Church of Christ, you are a temple of God. Then he says, if any man destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him. The Morehead City Church of Christ is a temple of God. And if I have a hand in destroying the Morehead City Church of Christ, God will destroy me. You say, well, man, glad I'm off the hook for that. Because I would never do anything that would destroy this congregation. But here's what we need to understand. There are two ways that you can destroy something. You can destroy it by action, or you can destroy it by non-action. You can destroy a house by bulldozing it, or you can destroy a house by neglecting it. Either one of those will result in destruction. One of them is much slower, but it is no less certain. You can stop changing air filters. Don't replace the roof. That's the only two things I know. There's other stuff. I don't know what they are. My wife is the man of the house. I'm not ashamed to say that. But if you fail to maintain your house, it will crumble around you because you didn't do anything. A church is no different. We can bulldoze the church. We can just do crazy things and completely wreck this church. Or we can not do anything or not do enough and just let the church collapse. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen a church just fade just because of neglect just wither away and die? That could happen here. And God is very, very serious about people who let that happen. So I would suggest that for each and every one of us, a worthwhile New Year's resolution would be this: I will discover and diligently fill my leadership, followership, and assistance roles in this congregation. That in 2024, I'm going to figure out what it is I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm going to do that to the very best of my ability. It is important that each of us make sure that this happens. So next Sunday, Lord willing, we're going to start a new series on foundations of our faith. This is connected to our Sunday morning study and the verse memorization and all of those things. So this is what we're doing beginning next Sunday morning, Lord willing. This coming Wednesday, we begin our class based on the TV series, The Chosen. If you do not have a study guide, please pick one up. They're in the back on the table. And be ready for that study. There is nothing tonight, by the way. We had a planned activity for tonight. It has been canceled due to injuries and sickness and other things. And so nothing tonight, just so you know. God has very specific actions toward His people and His enemies. If you are a child of God, God promises that He will give you deliverance and He will give you victory. If you are a believer, God will give you deliverance and He will ensure your victory. If you are an enemy of God, and we say this with no pleasure, no joy, no happiness, no pride, it's just the truth that those who are apart from God are the objects of His hostility. This is something that needs to be taken care of. Are you a child of God or are you an enemy of God? There are no in-betweens. There's no gray area. It's one or the other. If you are not a child of God, we would love to talk to you about how to become one. If you are a child of God and you're struggling with something, you know, one role that we didn't talk about really this morning is receiving assistance. You know, sometimes are in a position because of life circumstances where you're not able to do any of that. And that's perfectly fine. At that point, then you become a person who receives the assistance that we can give. And that's okay. And we want to do that. But we cannot do that unless we know what your situation is. And so this morning, as we're singing this song, if there's anything that you decide that we can help you with, we want to do that. We'd love to speak with you privately after church, or you can come forward, take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.